No matter how unfair it seems, there's no point sticking on with defensiveness. It just doesn't work. It evokes more and more of that criticism.
So pausing is so essential, because in that pause is the moment where defensiveness wants to come in quick. You want to deflect immediately.
Conflict comes pause. Oh, I didn't define whether it was defensiveness, criticism. It doesn't matter. Anything comes up when you're riled up, pause.
To mirror, it just gives, you are actually listening. Oh, you are actually. So even if the other partner was quite charged, it just brings it down.
Underneath criticism, there's always a diamond in the rough. Mm-hmm. You might need to be the partner in that conversation to practice powerfully to help your partner find the diamond in the rough. So welcome into the He Wants, She Wants Marriage podcast. In this episode, we're talking about the four steps to avoid defensiveness from ruining your communication in relationship. This is part of a five-part special series called the Marriage Apocalypse series. This is part three of it. We've already done the general setting, the tone for it. We've done a deep dive on criticism, and today, clearly, we're talking about defensiveness. Let's get a working definition on defensiveness first. Defensiveness is responding to feeling attacked with sidetracking or putting to the side, avoiding taking responsibility, and then leading with placing the blame on the other person. Defensiveness is just, it's a real party pooper in marriage, to say the least.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. And that feeling attacked is like, that is key, because very often we're feeling attacked, but there isn't an attack. We know, we've spoken to the fact that defensiveness can come as a result of receiving a lot of criticism from the other person. So in that case, there is like criticism is an attack. But it can also be a default setting of our system. So even when the person is actually trying to give us feedback or, you know, expressing something that they want to see a change with, there is that default defensiveness that comes in. And I know I can put my hand up on that.
Well, we can both put our hands up on this. We actually had a really interesting one just there yesterday, as tends to happen. I don't know anybody, if you've done a marriage podcast, many of you clearly will not have, but when we're doing an episode that week, I don't know, just the universe brings up our shadow side in it. So I definitely historically can put my hand up to that. And it took me a long time in deep men's work to get to the point where, oh, wow, my defensiveness is not as a result of being a victim to your criticism. Certain times. But there were a small pocket of times when it was explicit criticism, and we've already dealt with that one in the criticism deep dive. My nervous system had this default pathway which went to an immediate perception of I'm being attacked. And in these podcast episodes, I really want to tattoo it into people's minds and us together. It's the fundamental principle that we work off in relating together with the three agreements, which is our body is transmitting a message which is evoking a response. Mm. I look back at the message my body was transmitting in so many conversations. The default defensiveness would change everything. My mouth would go, you know, tighten up and turn away. My tone of voice goes, and then I'd speak. And then it's explicit avoiding the taking responsibility. I imagine like having a shield. It's like a warrior. I have a shield that I'm deflecting anything you're telling me of what I'm meant to do. And then I have a sword, which is, hey, I'm going to take whatever you're saying and put the blame on you by whatever means possible.
Yeah, it's the very common, well, I wouldn't be doing that if you didn't. So it's like, okay, so you haven't taken anything of what I've said And now, yes, you're blaming the other person. I know my default factory setting was defensiveness forever, like literally, because I come from a very authoritarian mother who would put down and criticize pretty much anything that I would try and say from a very young age. And so logically, I thought I was able to receive feedback, but I wasn't. That very tidy, argumentative, coming back all the time with something to say. It may not even have been a blaming of you direct. It was a justifying. So like blaming a situation. Because that's we may deflect the blame, and it may not actually that we want to throw it at the other person necessarily, because we, you know, you could have had some work done. You've done some work on yourself and you're like, well, I'm good with that. I don't blame the other person anymore, but I blame the weather, the government, the whatever, the car, the thing. So you're blaming the situation or your past. You can blame your past. I've done tons of that. So we're still deflecting and blaming, and ultimately we're not receiving that feedback. And of course, defensiveness can be created by a lot of criticism, but it will bring on criticism, because if you keep defending, by default, the other person then gets frustrated and they don't have any other way to get through to you than to go very direct and possibly quite hurtful with their language to actually just startle you and get through to you. So it's a really interesting mechanism.
What you were saying there, owning your firsthand experience of your abusive mother, I think it's very important to put it out there that in this profoundly sick society, I don't think anybody has got through childhood in this society through, you know, parenting, whether well-meaning or not, intentional, unintentional, doesn't matter. You know, the respect and honoring of your authentic truth as a human being, as a 3, 4, 5-year-old, you know, like your truth is of supreme importance to us. Your emotional experience, what your creative endeavors, what's coming through you verbally and in all forms of expression. I don't think it's an exaggeration to say nobody has got through without having some part of your nervous system that has been shock-loaded by parents, by teachers, by society at large. So the trauma pathways have been set down to have some level of default defensiveness when there's a perception of another person is attacking your truth, is attacking your expression, is attacking how you're showing up as a human. So it's going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Like the other episodes, the invitation is for people to be really, really humble. It's a horrible word in this society, but it's a very powerful relationship perspective coming from humus, which is the ground of truth of where you're at. Particularly on defensiveness. If I was listening to this episode 7 years ago, it'd be like, hey, defensiveness. Well, the only reason I'm defensive is because you're such an A-H, you're such a, hey, and I'd be, hey, the episode just before, criticism. Hey, baby, I think you need to listen to that. That's really at the heart of what keeps default defensiveness as a cycle. So the great invitation to everybody listening in is really deal with your defensiveness. That is at the heart center of really helping to eliminate powerfully. What we're going to be talking about are super powerful strategies that will help dissipate the criticism that's been coming to you from your partner. That no matter how unfair it seems, there's no point sticking on with defensiveness. It just doesn't work. It evokes more and more of that criticism. So these 4 steps are going to be massively potent antidotes to help pretty much dissipate 90% of the criticism that's coming your way. You have that power.
Yeah. So we're going to go into 4 steps.
Yeah, let's do this.
To be able to do that. And the first step, which this is like, I can go through all the steps, I suppose, first, and then just...
Yeah, pop through them.
Let's go through them.
It'll help
so
lock it in.
We'll start with pausing, really important. And then from pause, step 2 is owning where you're at. and we'll break them apart in a minute. And then we go into curiosity. And then from that, we go into what has been a pre-commitment of an if-then. So if this happens, then this is what I do. So step one is pausing. And that is like anyone that has been listening to my podcast, Daughters of Narcissistic Mothers, before that knows that I'm talking to pausing all the time. All the time. That pause is such a crucial thing, which I know I've got feedback just exactly 2 days ago on the fact that I don't pause. When I get defensive, I forget that little pause.
Well, keeping it playful, like in that moment, you didn't pause. And yet there are so many times I know in recent years, and it's cranking up massively in the last number of months, where the pause is actually coming in. We both have beautiful things to share live on this. So as we're going through them, we can share our experience of there yesterday. Neither of us practiced these perfectly. So there's a lot of juice there that will be of vicarious use to people listening in.
Yeah. So pausing is so essential, because in that pause is the moment where defensiveness wants to come in quick. You want to deflect immediately. It's like that person, like you're telling me, oh, you've been doing this, immediately I just want to go, no, fuck you. Like, I'm not doing that. It's you that is doing that, or it's whatever. And it's quick. So if you just feel that impulse that your partner has given you some feedback, has been saying something, and maybe they've even said it a little bit, it could be a nudge of criticism. Still, you can take a moment and pause and block that immediate flow of kickback, which is not going to be conducive to healthy communication. It's not going to be conducive to keep maintaining the connection and actually then move into an interaction that's positive, that's going to bring something to the relationship.
The taking that moment to pause, to breathe, to slow down and really just try to ground what's happening inside your nervous system, it's so key. It's the Gottman Institute, which we're basing this special series on. They've found that they can predict to something like a 99% level of accuracy how an argument is going to unfold at the end, if there's going to be connection or disconnection, at the 3 minute mark. So in the first 3 minutes, everybody listening, the first minute or two, if you take what we're saying and like that pause, that's it for every single thing that comes up. Conflict comes, pause. Oh, I didn't define whether it was defensiveness, criticism. It doesn't matter. Anything comes up when you're riled up, pause. Because in that moment, when you pause, you're giving you, yourself and your marriage and you're supporting your partner, because maybe they're temporarily absorbed in criticism, etc. You're giving an immense gift to your marriage, because that pause is stacking the odds in your favor that at the 3 minute mark, you're going to be shunting back and on track for connection to happen. That's massive. You go beyond the 3 minute mark and you go with that default. You don't pause. You blurt out the first thing in your mind. Now there's firecrackers happening in both nervous systems. The amygdala is just going on fear. It's going on anger. It's going on pissed off, frustration, hurt. We've all been there. Mm-hmm. It just spirals down and 10 minutes later, what the fuck was this argument? What did it begin with? Mm-hmm. So that pause is of massive importance. It's one of the things that I did really well yesterday. I actually paused internally because I caught that defensiveness you were giving for the context. Matilda has been doing this amazing professional course in trauma healing, and she was trying her best to give me beautiful guidance. You were actually with zero criticism in it. We were in the context, it was quite the relationship conversation that we were having. The default defensiveness definitely came up for me. Those first couple of thoughts, boy, that they were just like, okay, just I rear naked choked them, old jiu-jitsu style. I stopped them taking over my tongue. So I did the pause and it brought it to slowly but surely being able to listen. However, going into number two, I didn't practice very well. And that extended a conversation. Can you just give us a reminder of what number two is?
Oh, the point number two. Yeah. Yes. Owning. Owning is, okay, so you've paused. And without pausing, you actually can't really own, because the system, the body needs that time to give you the message as to what actually is really, truly going on for you. So that owning would have been in that situation, I have to own that right now I'm feeling resistance to what you're saying, or I'm feeling defensive, or I'm feeling my body has just tensed and closed. I don't even know why, and that's okay. But I want to let you know, because what I picked up was, I kind of know you. Yeah, he's not taking what I'm saying really well here. Like, his pursed lips, you know, the face has gone all serious, tense, jaws are tense. He's walking beside me, but I'm getting the bit of the back of one of the shoulders rather than, you know, he's like, he's not listening. He's not taking that on board. And I could have checked in, which is something that, of course, can happen. I didn't. I just still went ahead with what I was saying. But in that moment, the ownership helps the other person, because again, we can interpret things. We have filters. So I can start going, oh, is this upsetting you? Like, what's happening here? Like, oh, sure. Yeah, this is always, you know, you are always this way. And that, there's the criticism coming out. You're always not listening to me and blah, 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 blah. Rather than actually go, oh, okay, that's how you're feeling. I get it. I can pause. I can take a moment. And
well, what's lovely there, and this is for the overall conversation over the course of multiple different episodes here, what you practiced was that first agreement of playing poorly well. I was having that inner, and I had paused internally, and I was doing a lot of work. There still was resistance, and I unwittingly failed to explicitly tell you what was happening. I was doing a whole inward journey, and it was powerful, but it didn't let you in on it. You took it upon yourself to play poorly well, despite the signs you were seeing, and you kept a container which allowed me internally to get slowly but surely back into receiving the medicine of what you were trying to hit me with, gift me with, not hit me with it. So, yeah, definitely. Going back, I recognize in those first moments where I was pausing, the intensity of it. I actually think my awareness was having such a job that the defensiveness was so strong. I even forgot about the simple thing of, hey, I want to own that. There's a lot of resistance here. That would have changed the tapestry of the situation. It ended up taking about 5 or 10 minutes of you gifting me your wisdom to slowly but surely get me back. If I took step two, myself and yourself would have been into safe and supportive mode within, I think, 30 seconds.
Yeah, and it still goes back to that importance of pausing, because that pausing stops from going into reactivity. And because, yes, there was not an ownership in the moment, but that pause still allows you not going with, oh, you're always giving me advices and it's, you know, it's unrequested. I don't even, like, you know, whatever. Yeah. So that pausing and then followed by owning, it's really powerful already as a formula.
One super quick note, and it's to be consistent with the deep dive on criticism, to land it from a perspective of, a part of me is feeling defensive here. A part of me is feeling resistant to hearing what it is you're saying. It's just the part.
Always very important. Yeah, absolutely. So then we go into step three, which is that curiosity and how we bring that curiosity. And I want you to speak to that, because you're a little bit more of an expert on this point.
Why, thank you. You actually practice this really well. I think I've just studied it a lot more. You practice it really, really well. That's probably the ultimate that you want in your family, that you don't even know that you're practicing.
Yeah.
It just becomes a part of the culture. I've definitely taught it more often. The curiosity part. So you've paused, you've reeled in the horses of your default defensiveness, and we all have those horses. You state to your partner, externalize it, the owner, part of me is feeling defensive. And then you go into curiosity, because curiosity, remember from the definition of defensiveness. It's the feeling you're being attacked. Mm. Well, if you're feeling you're being attacked and you don't bring that into question, you're assuming the other person is wrong. So you don't want, in defensiveness, you don't want to know what the other person's perspective is. You've already, your nervous system within a nanosecond has defined them as an enemy that has to be defeated.
Mm-hmm.
So the really powerful antidote to defensiveness is practice curiosity. And that takes great courage. It's coming from a perspective that your nervous system might still have an element of, I don't agree with them. I don't, you know, it high chances there's probably still thoughts there that are resistant to listening, resistant to being curious. That's when curiosity is the most powerful tool in marriage. You practice it anyway. And curiosity, there's two really effective ways of going with curiosity. Is one, it's called mirroring. Your partner is talking, and again, don't use the escape route of, oh, they're criticizing me, so I'm not going to listen to anything. Remember, if you go to that episode, underneath criticism, there's always a diamond in the rough.
Mm-hmm.
You might need to be the partner in that conversation to practice powerfully to help your partner find the diamond in the rough.
Mm-hmm.
Curiosity will bring them there. Mirroring is you repeat back three or four of the key words of the sentence they've said beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
To try and give, fling something at me. Imagine you're pissed off. Let's do this live. We don't have.
Okay.
Imagine like that in this marriage.
I think I can work this. Okay, so you never listen to me. You always get defensive when I want to tell you that I have something to advise you on your health.
Never listen to you.
No, you never listen to me. And I just want to say something to you to support you.
To support me.
Yes, because I love you. It hurts me to see you feeling sick or not well.
Mm.
There you go.
And that was actually really live on what,
yeah,
what
that's
that conversation.
The example.
And I could perceive, tuning in, there was a real emotion there for you. And as the mirroring was bringing you there, I could feel the empathy pathways in me feeling in, going, God, was that all?
Yeah.
Did you love me? Because it's a real sweetening.
And the intensity from me just reduces. Even I'm kind of pretending, but I can feel it. I can bring myself there, yeah, emotionally. And I just go, oh yeah. Well, because defensiveness does that. Defensiveness, even, so whether you're, your partner is coming at you with a criticism like I've done now. That was like a direct, yo, you never, you always, whatever. Or they're coming to you with more of a, just a support, like I was doing, you say yesterday, but I think it was a couple of days ago. But it doesn't matter. A couple of days ago. What happens is we feel unlistened because the defensiveness puts a, as you said, there's this shield, there's a block. It's like, okay, I'm not hearing you. I don't want to know beyond what you just said. And I'm just going to attack back or close down. And that's how it then leads to the contempt and stonewalling that we're going to look into the next parts of the series. So to mirror, it just gives, you are actually listening. Oh, you are actually. So even if the other partner was quite charged, it just brings it down immediately. Yeah.
The magic that's in that is trauma is disconnection from authentic expression.
Mm.
So when you do the opposite with your partner, you're helping them access the polar opposite to their trauma pathways. You're saying, hey, I'm repeating back exactly because I'm actively listening. Three, four words of the last sentence you're saying, it's in your terms, in your words. It's going to be soothing.
Mm.
It really is going to be soothing. I didn't practice that.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening, but I didn't explicitly reflect back until very late. So I actually unwittingly made you work really hard to keep with the beautiful supportive things you were telling me, the advice and the guidance. I was making you work unduly hard. If I practiced the mirroring, it would have really activated that softening in you and we would have got there quicker. Just want to own that. So I got the pause right, but the owning and the mirroring didn't go. The labeling is another big one. Again, defensiveness. It tends to use every single thing that the message your partner is sending you. It's using all of that to either blame or shift responsibility. So it will use the emotionality of a partner to blame them. Oh, so you're just getting pissed off with me. You're just so frustrated. That's so typical of you. Okay. Labeling works with the magic of the emotional charge that your partner is experiencing in that moment. Whether it's non-judgmental. We spoke about this before, but it's to lock it in. It comes up again and again. It seems like you're feeling frustrated. Immediately.
Get a deep breath.
The deep breath, which... you know, I love this as a practitioner. I'm loving doing this episode because I'm learning so many if-thens of, oh, Mark, I had so many missed opportunities. If I said that to you early on, it seems like you're feeling, that's why I use the word frustrated, because what happened in your nervous system there?
I guess, you see, this is an interesting, it's noticing and everything is information. My deep breath would not be there if there wasn't still a charge from that conversation, because it got places and it was ultimately resolved to a degree, but like there's always layers to it, and and we didn't fully go probably to, this is actually information for me that it's not, there has to still be some frustration in my system under the surface and not live right now. But you say that as like, I can't fake it. I mean, it's not that I'm pretending to have a deep spontaneous breath that just comes. So yeah, that's, and it is something that has been on that specific topic, has been something that went on for years. We've had this ongoing conversation for years. So yeah. So like hearing that, being seen in the emotion that I'm feeling, because ultimately we do this in relationship. Like, so the advice I was giving was something very practical. And I was getting quite ultimately attached to that as a thing, although I was sort of going, you know, you don't have to do it. I'm just telling you, I was playing poorly well in that. But there was an attachment to the thing. So when we give feedback or indeed criticize, we might get very attached to something that seems like the real key to the situation. The frustration that's underneath actually is a different thing. It's like there's a deeper layer of, there's a love, and the reason why I'm getting frustrated is that I'm not able to get across to you, and this happens on an unconscious level, but I'm not able to get across to you that I'm caring for you and I want to be here to support. And yes, I do have some degree of knowledge on something, but I want to have a conversation ultimately. I want to be a team on this with you and not having you facing that alone or whatever. So to be recognizing that emotionality allows that next layer to come to the surface, because I can go, yeah, I am feeling frustrated. And I guess my own defensiveness goes down, and then from there, the next layer comes. It's that intimacy. We're beginning, as you said, when you own, you allow me to see into your inner experience. That's intimacy. And then by mirroring and labeling, you're showing me that you're seeing in my inner experience, which softens me. And then the conversation is completely different.
That's lovely. It's such a powerful thing. It's the ideal in this podcast scenario, that there's beautiful, juicy theory. And yeah, this shit works.
Yeah.
And yet to have it viscerally, anybody listening in and with the video, there's that undeniable visceral thing that's happening. It really does work. So we go from the pause and to own, even though I didn't practice. I'm resharpening my sword here today, post dojo, or back in the dojo. Then there's the mirroring label. That's the conscious curiosity. And then there's part number four. What is that?
That's the if then pre-commitment.
That's the bit I actually did practice. I did step one and step four. I butchered step three and four, or two and three. I made you work hard, but it did. And I think that's almost, and I'm not trying to actually sugarcoat it. It would have been, going back, it really, really put a weight on you and on that interaction, me missing out 2 and 3 unwittingly. But there's a power in these that if you practice a couple of these together, they can have the power of just keeping things, all of them together, you're singing and dancing.
So what's the if then that you practiced?
The if then, well, just super quick, because I want to just to lock it in for people at home. If then pre-commitments are probably the most powerful, it's the central most powerful tool that behavioral psychology has gifted humanity.
Mm.
It prevents the person that is defensive from going with these non-committal claims. Okay, I won't be late in future.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing in that.
It's going to be late.
And that's why your partner is going to be critical the next time, because they knew that you made this sugar-coated bullshit statement of, okay, I won't hurt you in future. Okay, I won't say those nasty things to you in future. Okay, I'll remember the next time I'm in town to pick up the thing that you've asked me for. We make these statements and some part of us thinks we've ticked the list. We haven't. The if-then pre-commitment looks like this. If that happens, then I will take this action.
Mm-hmm.
It's supremely powerful. When you get to that level of, I can never say it, specificity. I nailed it. Wow.
Yes, you did.
I got it. If you can get to it in that with that level of detail, if that happens, then I'm going to do that. There's two things. You, as the person who your partner is trying to give you feedback, what they're looking for, reminding people to listen to the criticism episode just before this, they're looking for a behavioral shift.
Mm-hmm.
So you're at the promised land. You're saying, hey, if that part of the scenario happens, then I commit to do this, and thus this won't happen again.
Mm-hmm.
The person that had the potential criticism or landed feedback, yours was feedback, was encouragement, was guidance, goes, okay, wow. Well, that's going to take care of that. It's not a sugarcoating generic statement that you're not going to act on. You've got really specific. So your nervous system has really engaged on a supremely practical level to come up with that. Cool. And for the person that comes up with that, the brain listens.
Mm-hmm.
It literally has that point in time. If that happens, the brain remembers. Yeah. It's like that point, not the generic scenario when we're out in public. No, when you open the door and go in, I want you to lead first.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, it's an if that happens, the brain goes, Roger that. The 5-year-old inside goes, I can win at this game. So the if then.
Yeah, because in that you're saying, what comes up is the brain doesn't want to make a lot of effort, doesn't want to use energy, and it's going to go to default patterns. So if your default is being defensive, if that's a pattern that's in the system from, like in my case, from childhood and stuff, if you don't have an if then, your brain, if you just said, oh yeah, sure, I'll listen to you in future, then the brain has to make a lot of decisions in a moment of actually when you're also triggered. So it's going to resort to default pattern. If you have that if then, that's way less effort for the brain to go, oh, I know we said, for me, it was like, if you told me, if I give you feedback, then you shut up and pause until you've taken it in. And then we can have a conversation that it wasn't you shut up and, you know, you don't ever argue with me. But you shut up in that moment and go with that pause. That's my if then. I don't even have to remember the other steps. My if then for my brain not to use a lot of energy is, if you give me feedback, shut up.
Yeah.
Just shut it, pause. And then from there, but that already disrupts the pattern and changes things.
Yeah, it's, I love when you bring in the energy element to it. Marriage can feel really complex. Mm. The if then, and actually these steps, I really want, my passion is and has been for years, and you're blue in the face hearing me say this. If our 5-year-old can't understand it, it's too complex.
Mm.
And if our 5-year-old can't play with it, oh, I'm going to pause. You know, your 5-year-old has to have a tool that it can go, I can do that. Okay, you know, Roger that, cool. I can play this game. You know, as a kid, we enter into, you know, depending where you live, you enter into the game of soccer for the first time. You enter into, you go to your cousin's house and they're playing a different sport there. You do a foreign exchange. You're like, oh God, I've never played baseball before. And you just pay attention. What are the rules? And once you get a simple idea of what the rules are, hey, you know, you're going to develop the skills over time, but you can enter into the game and you can actually have quite an enjoyable experience once you have, once the inner child has something that it knows can work.
Mm-hmm.
These are that simple. It brings the whole complexity of 30, 40, 50, 60 years of trauma into something that your 5-year-old can go, Roger that, I'm going to pause. Roger that. Is it that simple? Hey, a part of me is feeling defensive now. Yeah, give it a go. You know, the next part, oh, well, just stay in that zone and practice curiosity. 5-year-old goes, what's that? Just listen in intently. And it sounds ridiculously oversimplified, but it works. Just repeat back 3 or 4 of the words in the sentence your partner previously said. Is it that simple? Don't question it. Just try it. And do the same, and do the same. And then the if then, is that all I have to do? Yeah. Just get one part of the scenario that your partner is really trying to give you feedback. Assume that it's coming from love. They're wanting life to be easy for them and for you, and everybody in that scenario wants a nicer marriage, deep down. Try and figure out what the if then is. If this happens, then if I do that, does that improve the thing and touch base with your partner? You do that, defensiveness doesn't have to take any part of your marriage down, literally ever again. But you need to practice those 4 simple rules of the game.
Yeah. Pause, own, get curious, and then practice that if then.
Simple as that.
Yeah, it is. It is. That, for me, this has been like a really important lesson, because it is, well, it's been something that has been with me all my life. I remember even being told very young, oh, you can't take any advice, you can't take any feedback. Of course I couldn't. Like, I mean, it was landed like absolute crap at home. But that remained as a default pattern, which has caused a lot of conflict for us in marriage. And it doesn't have to. It doesn't have to. It's that I have my if then. I just paused. I take a few breaths. How many? Yeah, I think you told me last night about 30 breaths.
Yeah, 30.
I'm still counting.
At the very least. Within the context here, coming into landing, those of you that are listening in, wonderful. Kudos to you. Our call to action is share this with your partner. Yes, we're going to repeat that again and again with relentless willingness, because why? This special series is probably the most powerful special series any marriage podcast has ever done.
Yes.
Big statement, we're going to back that shit up. Why? Because it's a deep dive. When you and your partner understand, well, we've done criticism now. We've now done the deep dive on antidotes for defensiveness, and there's going to be contempt and stonewalling shortly to come thereafter. One of you is powerful enough, you both together get a working framework and a playbook that both of you know can work and make all of these antidotes a repeatable process. You can eliminate criticism, defensiveness, contempt, and stonewalling.
Yes.
So share this episode and the awareness of this series with your partner. That's the single highest leverage thing you can do for your marriage today. Guaranteed. With that, I think we're good to rock on.
We're good. We're good.
That was epic. That was awesome. Thank you, everybody, for listening into this episode. As I already said, you can look forward to the next episode. It's going to be the deep dive on contempt. And until then, dare to go get what you want in marriage. Bye, guys.
Bye.